It's our business executive feature, and today we speak to a businesswoman striving to make a material change in the South African economic landscape. She's dabbled in being an entrepreneur, has done a lot of academic work, lecturing at universities here in South Africa and overseas, and writing up lots of research papers. She's focused her attention on issues of innovation and is the co-author of a book entitled New Markets, New Mindsets. And then in recent years, she's been working to boost the potential of the youth. I'm joined on the line by Tashmia Ishmael Saville. She's the CEO of the Youth Employment Service, also known as YES. Thanks very much, Tashmia, for joining us. So just take us back a bit and tell us about your background and where you grew up.
So I'm a real South African story. Grew up born in Coronation, grew up in Fordsburg for my first few years, township girl, so Lanesia, you know, back in the day we had a very clear segregated community and grew up in this Indian community, Lanesia, which was in the south, but I had to travel each day to a convent school in Parktown.
Wow.
So doing that journey from Lens to Parktown each day. But you learn a lot, and I think the you know, people of my generation that grew up in a country that was still segregated, but a real understanding that change was coming, I think you cannot replace those experiences in forming what needs to change in a country and how we need to do that. So even though it was bizarre, or it is bizarre looking back on it now, you know, the benches with Slavs Blancas written on it, I wouldn't replace it, because I think it's given me a lens on how we need to behave that I wouldn't give up.
Excellent. So what about your educational path, particularly around tertiary level? What courses did you pursue? And at that stage, did you already know what you wanted to do in life?
I'm a product of a tiger mom who really thought that I should be in a medical career. And I loved studying. So, you know, studying to be a dentist initially, I got into dental school, which is med school for the first 4.5 years. Huh. And studying the human body and biology and anatomy and physiology was very exciting for me. And then, of course, you find yourself in a private practice and the world looks very different. And I realized, you know, that this wasn't the way my brain worked. I needed to work with teams. I needed to work on innovation and creation. And I wanted to do work that added value to people.
Yeah.
So I then decided to quit practice after 6 years and pursue an MBA at Gordon Institute. I won a scholarship for it, so felt I was on the right track, that I was being sent a sign that this was a good move. Before I'd gotten the scholarship, I also did a whole lot of non-degree courses to UNISA, which I think gave me a lovely broad understanding of different subject matter areas. I did everything from development studies and quantitative analysis and financial maths right through to English 101 with a stunning syllabus, you know, that helps you understand power and greed and gender.
Yeah.
So that informed my going into the MBA, where I took a big interest in innovation and economics.
So you've worn several hats in your professional life, based on what you've just told us as well. And of course, you talked about the dentistry. You've also tried your hand at entrepreneurship, as well as also playing in the academic space. Just take us through your professional journey and your various experiences.
So working as a dentist, I would argue, is entrepreneurial. You come out of university at a really young age, and you've got to set up a business with massive capex. I took out my first loans on my first practice at a time when interest rates were 22.5%.
Sure.
I still have the scars from that sort of payback. But I have to say that, you know, within 3 to 4 years, I've paid back all of the loans, and I was running a really profitable pediatric family practice.
Yes. There was no crowdfunding then?
No crowdfunding. I didn't, and I'm very proud to say I took no money from my family, took the loans out myself at the tender age of 23.5, and paid it all back. So my first entrepreneurial endeavor, I think I dove in without really understanding what I was getting myself into. But like all entrepreneurs, you muddle your way through and you keep pushing and you don't give up. And eventually my, you know, my practice was really doing very well. But like I said, you know, I needed the stimulation of something new.
Yes.
And so I did this MBA, and the business school asked me to stay on to work on a European Union project on global innovation networks. And this was also throwing me into the deep end, working with scholars from institutions around the world, 12 countries, BRICS and European countries, understanding the way firms connected into knowledge pools.
Yes.
And how that drove their competitiveness. Absolutely fascinating. And until today, the findings of that study inform a lot of my thinking. Gibson also asked me to take on a second role as faculty, which I did on condition that they would allow me to set up a program which we called the Inclusive Markets Program.
Right.
And the purpose of this was to work with companies to understand how they could create business models that also generated incomes for communities. So this win-win, do good, do well model.
Yes.
Which had its origins in base of pyramid strategies, but we didn't like this idea of bottom of the pyramid. We preferred the term building inclusive markets.
Mm.
And we did very exciting work. So it was a half academic, half consulting role, because the research we were doing was working with companies on how to drive innovation to build inclusivity. And we worked with Nestle, BASF, Unilever, GlaxoSmithKline, you know, a large
big companies.
Number of multinationals, big companies, to think about how in expanding their emerging market strategies, they would do it with this sort of model in mind.
Now, you've been at the helm of the Youth Employment Service since it was established a couple of years ago, amid much fanfare, as I recall. Was this the sort of thing that you were always keen to do? Has nurturing the youth been one of your passions?
You know, I don't know that initially the role was about nurturing youth for me. For me, it was, how do you achieve impact to scale? And, you know, in the consulting work that we've been doing, really interesting findings and working company by company on how you would have that impact at community level. And when I looked at the potential of the CEO role, I thought, wow, if I can be part of a national movement that creates income opportunities for you know, hundreds of thousands of youth, imagine the impact we have at community level, because nothing affects inequality and development faster than just getting people into a job. And, you know, when I took this role, of course, the first thing you do is you do a huge amount of research on understanding stakeholders in the space, what has been achieved to date. And I saw an area that was really ripe for disruption and innovation in thinking about how we got these incomes to people at community level. So the fit was more around impact and development initially than youth. But, you know, once you get into the youth space, you can't help but see how dramatic this problem is for the country.
Yeah.
And the youth angle became very important on giving them that first chance.
Tashmia, debates do rage about how much of an impact YES has made on the youth's ability to assimilate into the economy, with some arguing that it's barely scratched the surface. But I guess we have to really start somewhere, don't we? So just tell us about the broad initiatives and some of the aspects of the service that you're most proud of to have presided over.
If you look at the numbers on creating work experiences in the country, and you look at YES's numbers, so remember we get no government funding. We're fully private sector funded. So we're an NPO, but we generate our own revenue with the private sector. And so when we look at the YES impact, there hasn't been a program that has been private sector led that in 19 months, we've almost on 40,000 jobs, work experiences created. I'll call it work experiences because we do one-year jobs for youth.
Yes.
And 40,000 puts about 1.8 billion into youth wallets over these 19 months that we've created these opportunities. So that, you know, if we're going to look at that number that the president sort of threw out, you know, we can't judge the success of the program on one NPO on a political number. We've got to judge it on from starting from zero to have in 19 months 1.8 billion generated through private sector creating these opportunities and paying youth salaries, that's a big number. And my team are hugely proud of that achievement. What we also do is when we place these youth into these work opportunities, they get a smartphone as part of the package. And the smartphone has got learning digitized behavioral training apps on skills and professional development, soft skills and business literacy. And we've now on 6.5 million learning minutes delivered through that app, which Vodacom has very kindly zero rated. So these youth don't pay for the training in terms of data, and we're able to deliver this. So we've also been a mentor and trainer in the pocket of these 40,000 youth as they get placed across the country.
Hmm.
We've got a national footprint. We're creating jobs at community level. We've developed an Airbnb-style model where, yes, itself doesn't go and place these youth because we're not specialists in different youth jobs or specialists nationally where we're going to have massive overheads trying to build, offices. So
yes,
what we've done is instead, like Airbnb, not created the hotels that drive this, but work with implementation partners. I mean, we are so proud of some of the partners we work with at community level who are delivering community healthcare, early childhood development, digital skills at no-fee schools, reading and literacy programs. Our partners are in conservation and rhino protection, and we are very proud that we have been the stimulus and catalyst for corporates to sponsor jobs in sectors that really need those skills and those jobs at community level.
Yeah.
So I think that's another part of the program is we've even got youth in Northwest. So our footprint via this partner model has meant that we've had impact in little communities all over the country. Around the Kruger Park, for example, we've done thousands of jobs through partners like Investec and Meditronic, Johnson & Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take their money from urban centers and we use it to promote youth jobs in communities that really have high unemployment rates.
So
I think in terms of impact, it's been broad.
Yeah. Look, Tashmia, while YES is trying to do its bit in boosting the prospects of young people in this country in partnership with the private sector as well as government and community, of course, we know that youth unemployment remains alarmingly worrying. And of course, like you say, one MPO can't do the job. What is it about this major issue that is youth unemployment that most frustrates you?
What frustrates me on behalf of the youth is that there's a lot of inefficiency in a system that keeps failing them. And one of the big systems that I think fails youth is our education system. We simply aren't designing programs that prepare youth to leave the schooling system with a set of tools and collateral that allow them to build a dignified future. So that frustrates me because so much of what we could do to help youth is to prepare them whilst they're still in the schooling system.
Yes.
Yes, it's almost, if we had a functioning education system, yes wouldn't be necessary. Because what we're trying to do is equip youth with the tools to get into those first jobs, that first chance that catapults them along some kind of career trajectory.
Mm.
So I think that's one of the pieces that frustrates me, is if things were working, we shouldn't be necessary. There are things that are out of everybody's control. I mean, agencies working on the ground, which is economic growth. You do need some economic growth in order to stimulate jobs creation. So that is something that, we need to say, in the absence of economic growth, what are some of the policy changes and very well-crafted national strategies can we create to force youth into these work experiences, because economic growth is not going to do it.
Yeah.
And then the other big frustration is the structural inequality that still persists. If you are born in a township, your social mobility, your health outcomes, your education outcomes, your income, all of that is stunted purely because you were born in a space that is underserved.
Yes.
And marginalized. And so there's these deep you know, elements in our society that are just, the only way to label them is they're just unfair in giving a youth a chance. So unfortunately, when you ask me a question like that, there's a list. There isn't one thing. There are a number of frustrations that I think contribute to this youth employment crisis that we have.
And I hear that frustration coming through in your voice. Lastly, in conclusion, in this especially difficult economic and job climate environment, what are some of the key attributes you think are needed in leadership right now, whether it be at government level, corporate level, small business level? What are the key leadership attributes needed right now?
The top of my list is resilience. You know, I think that things have been so difficult. We look at companies collapsing around us. We look at massive retrenchments happening. You know, it is very easy to become negative and to throw the towel in. You know, we've seen the psychological pressure that the current environment is exerting. And I think leaders need to be positive. If you want to show leadership, I think the biggest thing that you can do for your companies, your people, you know, the conversations you're having over dinner is really to show positivity. How do we come up with strategies? We call it the Great Reset. Yes, it's got a campaign coming out with MultiChoice, which is encouraging companies and business leaders to say, if we all jointly press this reset button, you know, we can shift this mindset of doom and gloom. So I would say at the moment, you know, at different times call for different styles of leadership. But for me, it's the behavioral and mindset piece that leaders can do, that leaders need to do most work in at the moment. And that is just carry everybody along with an energy to say, how do we get out of this? How do we take steps forward and really start to press that reset button?
That was Tashmia Ishmael-Saville. She's the CEO of Yes.